Please, O Lord our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
Well, Shabbat Shalom, everybody. And a beautiful Shabbat it is. What a great day for a late afternoon walk. What do you think? You know, I wanted to make an introductory comment here about the purpose of sermons and why sermons are important. Something we don't think about a lot. The idea of the sermon in our context is not primarily to learn something new. It's good to learn new things. We're very much in favor of learning new things. But the main purpose for being here to hear the sermon is to be reminded of big truths that we don't hear reinforced during the week because we live in a culture that could really care less about some of the most important things that there are to know. Do you see what I mean about that? The idea is to be reminded of big things. And today, I want to do some reminding for you based on the experience of Jacob and Joseph as the story of Joseph is resolved when it comes to its beautiful conclusion. It's one chord, to use the musical way of saying it. The last chord, when everything gets resolved and is beautiful. So we are going to be looking at Genesis 47. And another helpful thing with sermons is not just to listen and just to involve your ears, but also to get your eyes involved. So I want to recommend that you get in the habit of taking one of the books and following along, because that way the more of your senses are involved in interacting with the Torah, the better it is and the more life-changing it is. You follow what I'm saying about that? I think you guys get that. So I want to commend that to you. You don't have to run out right now, but for the future. Okay, we are in Genesis 47, beginning in verse 28 in this the portion of the parsha that we'll be reading. Okay. Jacob lived in Egypt 17 years, and the years of his life were 147. So what this is about is the 17 happy years after a life of a lot of trauma and a lot of real difficulties. He did not have an easy time. God forbid it should ever happen, and maybe it has. In fact, it has had in to at least one person in this sanctuary. The loss of a child, it's incalculable, the pain that results from something so horrific as that. And for years, Jacob thought that his son was dead, killed by a wild animal. And then, 17 years ago, he discovers that his boy is alive, and it's been a great, great 17 years, reconnecting with the family and all that good stuff. Okay. When the time drew near for Israel, that's Jacob, he's called Israel, he's called Jacob. When the time came near for Israel to die, he called for his son Joseph and said to him, "If I have found favor in your eyes, put your hand under my thigh and promise me that you will show me kindness and faithfulness." We'll stop there just for a second. What's this bit about putting his hand under his thigh? It seems like a odd boundary crossing type of thing from our vantage point. But really what it was a way of making a covenant. It was a way of saying, listen, you are promising me something that has meaning for that which issues from my reproductive organs. I am speaking about things that go for a long time in the future. I'm talking about covenants and promises that will outlast me. And so it's a very dramatic gesture of putting his hand on his father's thigh as if to say, this is a serious thing and I am promising you something that's really important because it has ramifications for long in the future. Now here's what he wants him to do. Do not bury me in Egypt, but when I rest with my fathers, carry me out of Egypt and bury me where they are buried. And his son Joseph says, I will do as you say. He made a solemn promise. This is a big deal, okay? Swear to me, he said. And Joseph swore to him, and Israel worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff. So he got up and then is standing, and he's teetering a bit, but leaning on his stand, but he worships God and probably just thanks him for such a terrific son who was willing to fulfill his deepest wishes to not be buried in Egypt. So all of that begs the question, why didn't he want to be buried in Egypt? I mean, they have nice places to be buried there. He's an honored person by this point. Pharaoh thinks highly of him. What's the big deal? Well, here, the commentators, the rabbis, the people who wrote the Midrashim, they all comment on this, and a number of reasons are suggested. One is that he didn't want the Jewish people to think that Egypt was the Holy Land because his body was there. Make sense? He was an honored patriarch, and he was concerned that people might get confused where the Holy Land was. So that's one reason. And there are lots of reasons, but I want to suggest something a little bit midrashic, meaning it doesn't arrive immediately out of the text, but nonetheless, as we think of the flow of Jewish and biblical history, we see how this can be quite meaningful. It has to do with Michaye Hametim. Quiz question. What does Michaye Hametim mean? Does anyone know? The, say it? Yeah, the resurrection at the end of the age, Michaye Hametim. The second blessing of the Amidah that we prayed this morning, thanks God for Michaye Hametim. That's what we want to be talking about today. So Michaye Hametim. So the idea in Jewish tradition is that the people, the Jews who are buried in Israel, when Messiah comes and the general resurrection occurs, that if you're living in Israel, you get to go first. Yeah. And if you've been in Israel, you know that on the Mount of Olives, there are lots and lots of Jewish graves. And why is there such a concentration of graves at that point? Because Jews wanted to be as close to where the Messiah would come as possible because of this idea, this sensibility that you get to go first. Then, according to Jewish tradition, who goes next? It's the generation who died in the wilderness that never made it to the promised land. Isn't that interesting? And kind of poignant, you know? The idea that they never made it in, they died in the wilderness, and there was an element of judgment as part of that, but yet they're the next group to go. It's involved, the last group to go is the patriarchs. And you'd think, wouldn't they go first? I mean, they're the honor. No, this is the tradition. Get the feeling for it. We're not talking about what's literally so. I'll let you know when we're talking about literally so. But nonetheless, in the tradition, the idea, the patriarchs want the joy of seeing all Israel resurrected before they get their turn so they could see it. I think that's beautiful too, you know? But what we're talking about is Michaye Hametim, and there's another tradition. And again, I have to make a distinction because there's relative degrees of truth about these things. Here, what I'm going to suggest to you now isn't to be taken literally, but nonetheless reveals the heart of the people vis-a-vis Michaye Hametim, the resurrection of the dead. The idea is that what does God do for Jews who die outside of the land of Israel? There's a whole system of tunnels which will take the Jews to Israel so they can be resurrected there. Now you understand why I'm not suggesting that literally. I mean, there may be all kinds of tunnels for all kinds of reasons, another whole story. But it's the Midrashic way of just emphasizing how very important resurrection from the dead was. And so that's really what I want to talk with you a little bit today. And that has to do with the question, so what's so great about resurrection? Now, resurrection means putting the soul and the body together at the end of the age, the general resurrection of all the righteous, and then all the evil people too. That's another story. But what's so great about this idea of putting body and soul together? I mean, why not just hang out as a disembodied person? You know, bodies, they represent, you know, getting old and pain and backaches and all that. What do you need a body for? Well, it's a renewed body. But nonetheless, what I want to point out is why this concept of resurrection is so critical to our Messianic Jewish worldview, our understanding of life. Now, here's the first and most obvious thing. What resurrection suggests to us is that you, as a person, will not cease to exist, ever. You are going to continue on as you, with a self-conscious awareness of your uniqueness as a person, as a Christy, as an Eric, as a everybody. We continue on, and that is a phenomenal thing. You will never cease to be, and that is a lesson from the resurrection. Now, here's another related lesson. Because God is forever, and because we continue to exist, love, that phenomenal sense, it's beyond words. Poets try and express what it is. Just look at a mother with her baby and you get it all right? Love exists forever. Love is nothing that ever stops. It goes on and on and on, to be experienced by people who, with self-conscious awareness, are in God's presence, and that love just goes and goes and goes. That's a huge thing. You know, think about the most joyful moment you've ever had in your life. I mean, maybe it was when you got married, or maybe when a kid was born, or maybe something else that you did. Think about the happiest moment. Think about how you felt. Multiply that by about 1,000, and you're getting vaguely somewhere near what it's going to be like in the resurrection, because love is eternal, personal existence is eternal, and that's the way it is going to be. Now, here's another important lesson from the resurrection. Both bodies and souls are important to God. In our culture, again, there's a kind of schizoid attitude. On the one hand, there's the exaltation of the body. That's commercials on TV, that's this message that little girls get about what's important and how their bodies have to be such and such and all those different things. On the one hand, our society overemphasizes the physical, no question about it. But there can be a tendency also to, especially for religious people, to emphasize the soul, the immaterial part of you, to the expense of the fact that the physical bodies, physical people, physical life is very important. And when we think about the resurrection, don't think of it as the body gone. It's not. If you even think about Yeshua, who we'll talk about in a minute, his body wasn't gone. The resurrection celebrated and exalted the physical. It's just that in the resurrection, the physics are different. The rules of the game are different. But nonetheless, there's certain physicality to the experience of resurrections. And that's why, by extension, we in our synagogue, and most synagogues, I think this would be true, would emphasize both the greatness of the eternal unseen things, but also the wonder. And I appreciated the prayer that was offered this morning during our spontaneous prayer time. God, thank you for a day that we can go outside without a coat. And somebody might be tempted, because of the way spirituality often functions in our world, well, what's so great about that? I mean, that's way down here, and the great lofty things of eternal life and resurrection are way up here. But we would say no. What we would say is that all of it is important, the physical and the immaterial. It's all part of a unified picture which is celebrated by this concept of resurrection. So life in here and now is very important. Resurrection, the idea of body and soul connected, different physics in that day, but nonetheless, both are very, very important. And again, we think about resurrection and we realize that it's important as an answer to one of the most pressing problems that we face in this world, and that is it's an answer to seemingly gratuitous or meaningless evil that occurs to people. I mean, look, the 30-year-old mom of two dies of cancer, and I don't think it's unspiritual to say, God, why? Why would such a thing happen? Well, there's all kinds of answers that can be given, you know, environmental stresses that God says, listen, if you're going to screw up the world environmentally, don't make me feel obligated, or don't imagine that I'm obligated to make sure that the outworkings of that are going to be good for everybody. There's all kinds of answers. But at the end of the day, when it comes particularly to the premature death of a person, or the great suffering that we see even among some in our community, and you wonder, God, why? We can say legitimately that resurrection, the promise that one day everything is going to be fantastic for those people, for all of us who have gone through times of real suffering, is not a meaningless concept. We're not just talking about abstract theology that has no meaning. It has meaning because for people who are really suffering, to know that because of God and because of the promises in Messiah, that everything is going to be okay. In fact, more than okay, but 1,000 times better than the most joyful moments we could ever imagine, that is a big deal. And so I want to encourage you to view resurrection as a kind of answer to a problem that seems often insurmountable, and that is the absolute seeming perversity of premature death and great, great suffering, something we react against rightly and try and do the best we can to alleviate it and make it better. But nonetheless, resurrection really has much of the answer. I want to go on. Resurrection, why else important? Because resurrection is the way that God fulfills his promises to Israel. Why do you think it is that Israel needs to be a physical nation in a physical place with a physical people who are Jews? Not just anyone who calls himself Jewish because they personally have a feeling. No, a physical people. A physical people. Why? All of it is tied to the ultimate promises to Israel by God. That is, there'll be the dry bones which will come together. There's going to be a national restoration, a national resurrection, a national coming to life which involves both the spiritual and the physical, all beautifully melded into a seamless whole. All of that requires that the promises to Israel have this kind of physicality, this geographical element to it. And it's really, really important to keep that in mind. One other thing. Let's talk about Messiah Yeshua and the resurrection. He did many miracles, but the greatest miracle of them all is his resurrection from the dead. And the reason I get so excited about his resurrection is not only because of the implications and meanings that flow from it for Israel and the whole world, but because the resurrection is the best attested event of antiquity. There is so much evidence that it actually occurred the way we read about it in the Bible, that if you are the kind of person that I am, I've got to have my head and my heart unified. I can't have a religion where I really think it's irrational and wrong and there's no proof for it at all, but I want to give myself to that. No, it doesn't work that way. The way it works for me, and I think for many of you too, is you want to be a unified human being where what you know to be true spiritually corresponds and has this some evidence for it in terms of the physical world in which we live. And I'm very excited to tell you that Yeshua rose from the dead. Are you glad about that today? And are you glad that it's not just something that we affirm as a religious maxim or religious commitment, but also in addition to that, that it's part of our faith walk with God, but that it's rooted in reality of history? And I hope you get excited about that because it's really true. And so faith and clear thinking can go together, and it's so exciting. I have to solve one other problem for you before we close. And that is this question. If you think a lot about the other side, resurrection, life on the other side, the immaterial world, angels, God, you can't see God, will that dull your commitment to life on this side? Now, here's what I mean. A lot of people feel that to be religious is a huge cop-out because all you're thinking about is what happens later on, but you're not caring about the problems that we face right now and are trying to be part of the solution of those problems. Have you ever heard anyone intimate or say that kind of idea? Have you ever read it? I'm sure you have. You know, that I'm a realist. I believe in what I can see. Well, that sounds fine. But I think being a real realist is factoring in the truth of Yeshua and God's reality. Now, what I want to suggest to you is that it's true that it is possible to have your vision so focused on eternal things that you forget to help meet the needs of people right here and now and forget to get involved redemptively in this world as it presents itself. It is possible, but it is not necessary. It does not follow as a necessary conclusion or outworking or corollary to thinking about eternal things. As a matter of fact, I find, and I have a sense that a lot of you find, that knowing about the eternal things, the resurrection at the end of the age, that life has a meaning beyond the grave, that your personal existence will not cease but will go on, that actually can serve as a motivator to do things in this world that are redemptive and good. Sue and I were at a meeting the other night in our town having to deal with sex trafficking. It was very good. They showed some videos. It's a particular of interest of ours. And we have a sense that there's a lot more going on in that world than most people even realize, that there are institutional dimensions that are so horrific that don't get me started. But what I want to really say is that we're motivated to be helpful in our town in this regard, and we're just getting started, not because that takes our mind off of the great eternal things. It's we want to see God smile on the other side of the resurrection, and He demands of us that we make a difference in this world, right at the in this world that we inhabit, the physical world in which we're in. Do you get what I'm saying about that? It is very important. God is not saying what counts is the eternal and all this earthly stuff means nothing. No. This earth that He made is important, and He wants us to have a redemptive influence in this world. And each individual can do so much. As a congregation, we do a number of things. We hope to do more. But the point of the matter is that focusing on the resurrection and the blessings of being in God's presence forever and experiencing the joys of being with other people, unencumbered with the problems of this world, it doesn't have to demotivate at all. As a matter of fact, it should and can and does motivate us. And it keeps us from discouragement, because when we do good things, even if there isn't some immediate response or reward, we're aware of God's smile. And His smile is worth it. His smile right now, saying, hey, those are my kids and they're trying to do the right things for this world, Mitsuyan, excellent, excellent. And His smile is worth it. So the point of the matter is, we want to be part of that resurrection. And I do want to say to you that maybe there's a person or two here who's never entered into the fullness of that expectation, and that happens through Yeshua. And that happens through trusting in Him. He is the one who will gather all of us and bring us into the presence of God. He is the one whose atonement makes it possible. He is the one that we surrender to. And because of that surrender, we have the hope, the trust, that one day we're going to experience that resurrection, whether we're in Israel or not. And one day, we're going to experience the fullness of God through this magnificent person, the first fruits of the resurrection. Enjoy the idea of the resurrection. It is so wonderful. Let it motivate you to be the kind of person you want to be. Shabbat shalom, everyone.
Thank you, Rabbi.
The words of the Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, let the words of the Torah sweet in our mouths. In the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. In the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. And may your descendants and the descendants of your people Israel be those. Oh, no. Your name. Messiah.